pretty good. So yeah, is it possible to shut that door?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is Matt and Laura, and we're here with Bob Halleck. I guess we'll start with Jesse Van Vechtenbetter. Trying to do as much research about her, I think. Like I was saying, opposed to Henry Hudson's man who didn't even really want to find this place, and then and then Mrs. Vetter, who was out there, you know, really saving the history.
Can we start with Bob telling us about how he got involved in learning about the history here and became president of this historical society?
I lived here all my life. I've been a member of the historical society since probably 63, 64. My parents were members beforehand, so I had a pretty good knowledge of county history to begin with. In 1986, I became the financial secretary for the Greene County Historical Society, and I've been involved here since then. So I've increased my knowledge. I tried to absorb as much of what Ray Beecher knew as possible. I've often said that there was a science fiction movie, Donovan's Brain, in which the brain was kept alive when Donovan died. And I said we should have had Ray Beecher's brain in a machine here, because people would ask and he would say, "Yeah, I know about that." And he'd tell them just exactly what the facts were. So that's how I got to be here.
Are there a lot of unfinished Raymond Beecher works that he was, after the Catterstill Club?
Well, I'll tell you one quick story. He had done an article on the Catskill bookseller, and that was just published in the journal here, I think the last issue, 2 issues ago. And he had done that about 10 years ago, and we gave it to people at the McCord House by the name of Hank. And they were supposed to transcribe it and put it into a format. Ray did everything pretty much in longhand.
Right.
And then they moved. And we asked them where the document was, and they couldn't find it. They didn't know anything about it. Da-da-da-da. So Ray passes away. And about 6 months after he passed away, the Hanks send up this folder with the bookseller article in it. So you don't think that Ray, go look in the file cabinet. I'm positive he did that. But yes, there was that, and he has a book on the landings that is at Black Dawn Press in some stage of development.
The landings?
Along the river.
Okay.
New Baltimore to Catskill.
Huh. So that article, it came out.
It came out.
What was the magazine you were saying? Is this Catskill Life or what?
This is the Greene County Historical Society Quarterly Journal.
Okay.
We do 4 journals a year, and each one has several articles of local history in it. That was one of Ray's.
Cool. So this was the last year came out.
Right.
Okay.
The journal continues.
Right.
There was one last.
If I wanted to look for that journal, or somehow download.
Yeah. We've got copies of it right out.
Oh,
there.
Great. Might have to become a subscriber. And I guess the landings. I've in my research these Walter Van Loan pictures and Richard Philp had an engraving of the landing when it was just really thin strip and how it developed. Into this whole Dayline Wharf.
Oh, yeah.
And then what it is now,
Well, Catskill Point, which is where the landing was in Catskill, because you had the navigable creek, that was originally just two islands that sat out there in the at the end of the creek. And from, as you come down Main Street and you take a dip down, you come down a hill, and there used to be a Waterfalls Laundry that was on the right-hand side. There was a building there, and that's been torn down now. It's owned by the county. But as you come down that hill, just before you go into Dutchman's Park, that's where the original shoreline was. Okay. It wasn't until about 1820 that a man by the name of Powers, of the Beatty Powers house, uses as a public works project, if you want to call it that, but also to increase Catskill's capacity, puts in the long dock to connect those islands with the mainland and use it as a transportation and shipping area and so on. And then gradually over the years it fills in and they keep expanding.
Cool. So Powers.
So it just naturally filled in from the, so it was filled, they dumped stuff.
Dumped everything.
That's what I thought.
Dutchman's Landing was the Catskill dump for quite a while.
Okay.
And then right before you get to the landing is the Hoppenose Rock.
Hoppenose, supposedly an Indian site. There may or may not have been a Indian cemetery there.
Right, that's what Mabel says. Yeah,
that's what you were saying.
The problem is that you had in the 1740s, 1750s maybe, a man by the name of Jacob Dyes and his wife build a huge house there, the Dyes Stone Jug. And farm the area. That is torn down to make space for the Catskill Armory in the middle 1800s. Just below that is where the Catskill Shale Brick Company is excavating and creating shale bricks for up until about the 1900s. So you have a great deal of excavation and soil disturbing and so on. So
there's no telling.
Can you be sure of anything?
Is that tower that's there now? Is that part of the old brick?
No, it's the sewing factory. Hoppenose sewing factory.
Oh, the sewing factory.
How big was that place when it was?
There were really no big industries.
Right.
The basket factory sat on the other side of the Catskill Creek, and that's the building they just took down here 2 or 3 years ago, just below the marina on the other side.
And then Hoppenose, maybe this Indian named Hop that was had a big nose. I mean, I don't know which of my books I read that, where that thing comes from.
There's no good way of telling where that came from.
Right.
It's so much about the Indian population of this area that we just don't know about.
Right, because you're saying oral history and even to the map you produce in this or from you reprint. Is like the Indian nations and how it's broken up.
The Mohicans in particular. Who were the natives in this area. And when you get to Catskill Creek is the dividing line between the Delawares, which are the Lenape, and the Mohicans, which are the River Indians. Except it's not the exact boundary. So were these Delawares who were there, or were they Mohicans? It's
right.
And since the Mohicans did not have a written language, and within 50 to 75 years after the Dutch presence, the Mohicans are, for all intents, gone from the Hudson Valley.
That's the Roger Islands kind of runoff that Melville talks about, that big showdown.
Well, that occurred in about 1640, 1650.
Okay. And once again, it's an oral story.
Yeah, clearly there was a battle.
Right.
Clearly the Mohicans lost. Where did it take place and when?
Right. Yeah.
It's a big question.
It's a story.
The Mohicans said that before the Dutch really came into Fort Orange or Beverwyck, that they could have defeated the Mohawks. They had them on the run. And the Dutch governor of Fort Orange takes his gun and goes out with the Indians to defeat the Mohawks because he's got the guns. And he doesn't. The Mohawks beat him and they go back to Fort Orange. And at that point, the Dutch say, you know, tell you what we're going to do. You don't fight with the Mohawks anymore. And we'll trade with the Mohawks and we'll give you enough stuff to keep you, you know, take care of things. And that was pretty much the Dutch policy, was to keep them separated. But the Mohicans said for years after that they were in a position to defeat the Mohawks. But
once again,
things went downhill after that.
Well, how much, I mean, in Jesse Vedder's history, seems like it was important that, you know, there's always a section about the Indians in the area. Like, do you know about her going out and how she collected this information, or she was talking to survivors or Indians that were still in the area?
Jesse came from a family, the Vinvectans, settled in the Catskill area. There's a house on Snake Road. Yeah. Which they purchased, I want to say around 1670, don't hold me to that, but somewhere in that vicinity. And were there for the next 300 years. I mean, this was a important family.
Right.
The Vinvectans, Samuel Vinvectan was in the American Revolution. He was in the Continental Army. He is with Benedict Arnold on Lake Champlain in 1776 when Arnold builds the fleet of ships on Lake Champlain to hold off the British from coming down until the bad weather approaches in the fall. So he's certainly an important figure. His brother, Abraham, is an attorney, the first member of the New York State Bar, and an attorney general for the state of New York. So this is a family that is substantial, well-known, has a sense of history, and they marry the Vedders, and the Vedders are another long-time family. So Jesse has all of this stuff.
Right.
In her head, it's in her veins.
Right.
She hears the story, she knows about it. She grows up in Leeds, old Catskill, with all of this information and stories that she's heard, and uses that information to begin to say, hey, you know, it's time to put some of this stuff down. And so she's got an interest in everything. Leeds was also in her area, and the area she grew up in was where Walmart wanted to put the store out there, and they found the Indian burial grounds, and so that put the kibosh on Walmart. But so that clearly there were, she knew this stuff.
Right.
She grew up with it. And her family, I'm certain, told stories of past events and everything else.
And then they, of course, found more artifacts in the Walmart, whatever, AIM store, but then they were kind of like, you're not going to stop us twice, you know. We're just going to, you got your one back and leads to play with.
Yeah.
Merryvetter, who was, I mean, it turns up in the Du Bois Catskill Boyhood that she was, Merryvetter was teaching him dance lessons. I don't know, is that like a sister or, I don't know.
Probably a relationship. I'm just not sure. Okay.
So the Snake Road house is still there. I mean,
Still pretty much unchanged. It's undergone a lot of renovation.
Oh, really? No one's claimed it a trademark or a landmark. No one's tried to like.
It is a National Register of Historic Places. Okay. It's on that list.
So renovations have to be in accordance.
Right.
Okay.
Right. People who are doing the current renovations are being very painstaking about it.
Okay.
They're doing a really good job of it.
I don't think it was your article, but the round, like remnants of, you know, stone houses from who knows 10,000 years ago, and none of them were beyond Wyndham, meaning everyone was around the creeks and the water. But you said there's about 10, or is there about 10 remaining, or are they still there? These
stone houses,
or even stone remnants of the, you know.
Well, you have the Bronk House, which is 1663, probably the.
But even I'm saying 10,000 years ago, like the
10,000 years, no.
There's
no
ruins,
no remnants, no indications whatsoever. For the most part, the Mohicans lived in a variation on the longhouse.
Okay.
It was smaller and it was more round than a longhouse, and a smaller family operation in it. But they were for lack of a better term, a nomadic tribe, so that they moved depending upon the season and the where the things were. You've got a great deal. We have artifacts from a dig at the Save-A-Lot site up here in Coxsackie that date the habitation of that section back about 10,000 years. And we have several arrowheads, tools, things of that. Some small pieces of pottery, not too many. But there were no villages, there were no things like
permanent,
that.
Permanent
structures.
Can you talk more about in one generation from when the Dutch came, the native people were gone from the Hudson Valley?
Hudson appears in 1609, and you begin to get into trading furs for
knives,
guns, pots, cloth, things like that. The Flint Mine at Coxsackie, which is just down the street here, Flint Mine Hill, was a major center for Indians in the area to come in, take their flint, make their pieces, and go home. But once you see a knife made of steel versus a stone knife to take care of your deer hide or whatever, it's no choice. I want the knife. And they feel that this is a wonderful thing. I can take my furs, which are plentiful and useless to me, and get clothing and knives and pots and pans and things like that. Well, this is a great deal. But by about 1660, furs in the Hudson Valley are pretty much gone. They've trapped them out of existence. So now you've got land. So I'll Peter Brock purchases the property here for 2 beaver skins. Tradable commodity, it's a known value, the Indians can trade the beaver skins for whatever they want. He gets the property, and it works. So, by that point, you've also got smallpox and measles, the problems with alcohol with the Indians, and there's somebody who speculated, and it was 1491 was a book that was written a couple of years ago, that the Indians have 7 to 10 less genes in their stomachs to process alcohol than Europeans, which means they just can't deal with it. Europeans can get drunk and wake up the next morning and go on. Indians can't. They just can't process it the same way. So between drunkenness, diseases, the populations just dwindle and are pushed to the wayside. So by the time the American Revolution, the Mohicans are pretty much in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, because that's where they've been assigned to a small reservation, or others have gone out into the Iroquois area and joined with villages out there. So they're gone for all intents and purposes.
And then the ones that weren't gone were just swept through. I mean, she has property in the Finger Lakes. She was telling me about a sign that's just kind of like, this is where, what was his name?
The Clinton Sullivan campaign.
Clinton Sullivan came up through the Finger Lakes and just
sweeped them.
Decimated. Do you know if there have been any native land claims in Greene County?
Not that I know of. As I say, for one reason, the Dutch kept extremely good records. There is a deed to this property that exists in the Albany County Hall of Records, signed by Peter Brock, signed by the 2 Indians that represented the Mohicans, and witnessed by the Dutch, with a description of what the transaction was and what the property consisted of. So it's kind of hard to say, you stole my land.
Right.
Well, if you've got a deed signed and dated and witnessed and so on,
right,
it's kind of hard to argue that. And that's true with most of the properties around here.
Do you know where the closest native land presently to Greene County?
I think that the Stockbridge Muncie tribe has control of that burial ground in the Leeds area. I think that was the deal that they finally made. Other than that, the Mohicans really don't have a presence here in New York State.
Isn't there a Mohawk reservation?
Mohawk. Oh, yeah. The Mohawk, there's the Akwesasne, which is the reservation in the north. There's a gambling casino there. There are other spots within the Adirondacks. There's the Oneidas and the Onondagas and so on, that all have pieces and bits and pieces. And the Oneidas are divided between the Oklahoma Oneidas and the Wisconsin Oneidas as to which one is the true Oneidas.
Quickly back to Hop Nose, but how many steamships, wrecked into this rock? I mean, somewhere. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
there were no real dangers in the Catskill Creek.
Right.
There were no major accidents. May have been a couple of fires or things like that, but nothing there. Where accidents take place is the area between roughly Catskill and New Baltimore. And that's where the most of the dangers take place, because the channel keeps moving and you've got some substantial rocks in there that the wreck of the Swallow, which is probably one of the most famous ones. They left Albany, were involved, depending on whose account you believe,
right.
Were involved in a race and hit a rock off the shores of Athens, and the boat burned and sunk. Of course, they denied that there was a race going on. They denied that there was any alcohol involved. But there were people who said that, yes, it was a race, and yes, they were drunk as skunks.
How many people died in that? Or who knows? People swam off
the boat. It's difficult to tell.
Okay.
Because they didn't keep records.
Right.
And they knew they had 28 staterooms, and they knew they had X capacity.
Right.
But
then for them, it'd be better to downplay anything and just be like, you know.
If you don't know, you don't keep records, you know, I've got passengers on board, but you don't know how many.
And then Charles Swain was like, Capados, that's where the Indian maids would jump off if they couldn't get a, you know, husband. I mean, but that's more, you know, he seems like he's going towards the, you know, the houses that are haunted. Yeah. And he's kind of, you know, which is great. I mean, it's great. Like, right. Imagery, yeah. And the Indian with the big nose and the rock that kills the steamships and, you know, maidens jumping off. But
so much of that has really no basis
in any
verifiable facts
right.
whatsoever.
But just, yeah, for colorful...
Good stories.
Yeah.
But...
What is the Loveridge patent? That's dealing with hop nose? Or that's
Loveridge is the more or less the village of Catskill.
Okay.
That's, I believe, Catskill and perhaps the... Embaugh area.
What's that word?
Embaugh. That's the area to the west of the Catskill Creek and just to the south of Catskill.
What is the word? Embaugh?
Embaugh. Embaught.
Embaugh. Never heard that word, but that's not... And Kiskatome, or it's kind of...
Kiskatome is an Indian word.
Okay.
Tell you what it means, but I can't think of it right now.
How much was the pat? I mean, do you remember what the Loveridge, what the steel, like two beaver skins versus whatever the Loveridge?
Well, the Loveridge patent was much later than that.
Right.
And the Loveridge patent was a grant or a purchase, depending upon how you view it, of a given area. You have title to this area.
There might not have
been
a purchase. Yeah, just more like chopping it up. Has anyone written any bios on Jesse Vedder?
I don't think there's been a bio. There's probably an obituary in the files here.
Right. Yeah, it seems like
I was just trying to think that clearly, you know, she was a housewife. She had children. She was active in the community. She led the fight for the restoration, saving of the Leeds Bridge.
It's still there.
Still there. She, I mean, you consider this is the 1900s.
Right.
To have a woman stand up to the state of New York and force them to rebuild the stone bridge. It's a little bit different angle than it was before, but it's still a stone bridge. Right. It's still the
so they took it down, and then she's like, and they were going to put up a modern
bridge. They were going to put up a modern bridge.
So what, was it a flood that knocked it down?
It was a flood they clearly they needed a new bridge. Because now you've got vehicle traffic that is a lot different than horse and wagons coming across here. And there was no doubt that they needed a new bridge. But in Jesse's mind, this stone bridge that had sat there since about 1792, and incidentally the Catskill Packet, the first edition, talks about the completion of the stone bridge. But sat there since 1792... So, in her mind, this is something in my backyard that I want to save. And she did. And she forced them to rebuild it as a stone bridge. As I say, a little bit different
angle,
curvature, but still recognizable as a stone bridge and still there today. So she went from that to become the first county historian.
First Green County historian.
First Green County historian. She served as an unpaid historian appointed by the county legislature sometime in the 1920s. I want to say 22, but don't hold me to that.
After she published, or the
after the bridge.
And then, but the history of Green County was 27 that she published it?
Right.
Okay.
And that was one of her first acts as county historian.
Nice.
At the same time, she is also involved in the founding of the Green County Historical Society. And I believe that she is the first secretary. But the person elected as president leaves town after 6 months. And Jesse is the one that begins to hold the thing together, helps to form the society and ensure that it continues and is active in the society until her death in about 1946-47.
Is the farmhouse on, somebody said the farmhouse on Vetter Mountain Road that we drive by, you know, do you know that little, right on the bend right before you get back to Cottersgill?
Is that
a Vetter in there?
I've got to think. There was, she had three children. Three children. She had a daughter who married a Parks, and the grandson was Kenneth Van Vechten Parks, who was an officer in the Army, and later came back here to Greene County, lived in Catskill, and worked here in the library for 30 years. Did a lot of the birth and death research and information. Then there was Ruth Vetter Schmidt, who just passed away here about a year ago at the age of 96, lived in Leeds, and her sister. And I think that it is the sister's husband or sister's son who is living on the family farm.
Which is on that Vetter Mountain Road.
On that Vetter Mountain Road.
Okay.
Is there any bit of writing that she did that was anything other than historical writing? Was she a writer? Was she?
She did a series. it wasn't just her, but she was involved in a series of I think they called it the Old Times Corner. And they later published it as a book, one of the society's first publications. But it was columns that had appeared in the local newspaper that either Jesse wrote or the other person involved with her. I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but we've got a couple of copies of it out there.
Of the collection?
Right.
So that was just, I mean, that'd be interesting to read because it's probably like little vignettes or just...
It's bits and pieces of everything.
Right.
It's genealogies, it's family history, it's discussions right. of, you know, what I remember.
Right.
It's a variety of stuff.
Cool.
I mean, I was more wondering if she writes these historical things, and maybe she just got into writing, and there's some love poem that she wrote somewhere, that's or some short story somewhere.
Yeah,
or some
I don't think so.
Autobiography.
She was definitely a keep history alive, keep local history alive, that type of a person. That was what she was mostly interested in.
Or the stack of documents that like people have, you know, that she hasn't edited or you know that haven't ever been published or you know how much did she leave behind, like a trunk full of just papers that were like
not that we know.
She was pretty focused on these histories.
I mean, I was kind of surprised she didn't write a memoir.
She
was busy.
It wasn't her thing. That was I don't need to do that. Spent my life preserving history and so on. Matter of fact, Jesse lived here at the Bronk House during World War II. I'm not sure whether she was living here because she felt it needed to be protected, or whether that she thought it was a target for some sort of German attack. I don't know, but
she moved back from her own house, or
right. She was, apparently at that point, she was the one who was showing the house and doing the tours and so on. So it was more convenient for her to be here. I mean, at that point, she's in her 90s. So it's a little more difficult to go from her home in Leeds to here every day.
Right. When did... Where does
Mabel picks up late 40s, early 50s.
Okay, so pretty much after Jesse. Or there's somebody
she knew Jesse. She knew who she was. She may have had some discussions with her, but she follows Jesse.
How many variations on this Walter Van Loan, you know, map? I know there's a newer one. I mean, you know, I really like it. I've used it for the sign for the museum, but just, you know, then he's got one where he pencils in the Otis Railroad, and then he's got the more, you know, almost futuristic.
Van Loan was a published many times on variations. And
right. I mean, yeah, really kind of. And then this is the Grant Hotel here. This little building is that the Grant?
This one?
Yeah, that's the Grant.
Or, no, wait a minute.
He married one of the Beaches, who's the...
Or is that the Prospect?
Oh, that might be the Prospect, yeah. Oh, yeah, that is. That's the Prospect Park Hotel, yeah.
Grant House would have been up closer to where the Columbia or the Green Medical Center is now.
Up in Jefferson Heights.
Yeah.
Okay. In this, these guys, Antioria, that's a word they made up, that, you know, this land in the sky, this whole Indian name for the Catskills.
Supposedly that is an Indian word.
Okay.
There is some indication that that was a an evil spirit that had appeared in the land and was thrashing around through the area. And Manitou, the great spirit, turned him into the Catskills.
Right, the man. Okay, so he turned. Okay, so that's the connection, because I was always like, maybe they made this up, but Michie Manitou, whatever, was the spirit, but then he turned Ontiora into the sleeping man, or whatever.
Is that a true story?
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, it's interesting.
Depending on who you see in the Catskills when you look for the man.
Yeah, yeah. But then the fact that there aren't, you know, like I was saying, these stone foundations or whatever, I don't know where exactly I read that, but they're all around the creek. Of course, that's where transportation was, right. And they found very few, like, deeper into the mountains, meaning, like, everyone. And then, yeah. You know, then the names to follow, like, Devil's Tombstone, Hell's Falls, yeah. You know, it's all kind of like, you know.
A lot of that is, is mid-18th century invention.
Right, right.
A good description to draw people to the site.
Right, right, right.
Well, there's a... I just came across this a couple of days ago that the Salisbury family in Leeds, one of the Salisburys, and this is before the American Revolution, had a indentured servant. But she liked to spend her time with the neighbors. And so Salisbury rides out to the neighbors, grabs the servant girl, ties her to the tail of the horse, and takes her home. Because she deserves some kind of punishment. Now, he's not going too fast, but the horse is spooked by a rock and rears up, and she is killed. So he is charged with murder. Now, the patroon out in the Woodstock Caro area, James Barker, called the patroon, not really a patroon, defends him. He is never brought to trial, but the story grows as the years go by. And supposedly he is sentenced to wear this silver noose around his neck until he dies. And at the age of 99, he still has the silver noose around his neck. Now, when the Mountain House comes into being, particularly in the late 1800s, they're telling the story, but now instead of Salisbury, it's Captain Kidd's wife, who is kidnapped and killed in order to get Kidd's gold. So the story kind of moves and becomes as good as the teller or as good as the storyteller wants to
be. I thought the story was going to end somehow that dragging of a woman, and then there was like some kind of ghost called Annie Lee or something. There's some kind of like ghost that she dragged.
There is an indication that there might be a ghost out there, but since the development of cars and electric lights and so on, nobody has seen
right. The
ghost of the servant girl. So
okay. Right.
Did she go away? I don't know. Maybe you just can't see her anymore.
Yeah, I guess quickly when they started to disassemble the whole train network, you know, it was like whatever the oil companies, whatever, bought them and, you know, took them out of commission, or the you know, depression came and then people weren't going up to the mountain houses anymore and then they just started to, you know, burn.
Well, the car...
Right.
And the road up
Rippenwinkle
Trail, the Mohican Trail, whatever you want to call it, really put the kibosh on the train. It just became too expensive and too prohibitive to do that. And people could drive.
Right. I looked up yesterday for the first time after being involved with the Walton Van Loan maps, and you can actually see where the trees have grown back in a different sort of section. So it's kind of nice, you know, just to imagine this mountain house thing sitting on the top and huge, you know, Catterskill house, and yeah. Any more thoughts? What was Dr. I mean, I don't know where I even wrote this down. Dr. Murdoch's Phantasmagoria. I mean, this is this like one of these Rips Retreat kind of, or where they got this from?
I'm not familiar with it.
I got it. Or Major Morningstar, if she's like some actress or something. Yeah, it's just like, will she find her Prince Charming? I don't know.
Oh, it was Maude Adams. Maude Adams lived at the in the Hunter.
Who was Maude Adams?
She was. She was a very famous actress
in
the late 1800s, early 1900s. Peter Pan.
Yeah, Peter Pan, Maude Adams.
And had a home there in Hunter for quite a while.
And then...
Most people today wouldn't know who Maude Adams was.
No, I did write her name down recently for something, but... Cool. That's definitely lots of good material to search through, and fun to look around here.
Two governors in New York State, born in Wyndham.
Yeah, that's the. I think she talks about that in here, right?
Yeah. The man who drilled for oil in Pennsylvania, the first find, Colonel Drake, was a Wyndham native.
How did Wyndham get started? I mean, being so far west, or
after the American Revolution, there may have been some hunting parties that went up through there, but generally about 1780, 1785 is when you begin to get movement into the upper regions of the mountains.
Have you lived here all your life?
All my life. Uh-huh. Well, I spent 4 years in Buffalo going to school, but other than that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereabouts in the Finger Lakes were you?
I have family on Seneca. Just
which side of Seneca?
On the east side of Seneca, just north of Watkins Glen, about 15 miles north of the Glen. On the east side, Hector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you or your family know the Navarre Baird?
Navarre Baird.
Lived in Hector, worked for the local fuel oil company. Can't remember what their name was. Big family, big name.
The Bairds. Yeah. No, I mean there's the Wickhams and the Bonds.
He worked for the Wickhams.
That's for the Wickhams.
Yeah. And his wife Tess had a beauty shop in her home.
In Hector,
yeah. Well, actually, I guess it was Valois, but Hector Valois is
right there.
Oh, almost.
I mean, Hector, the town of Hector is huge.
Yeah.
The village
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now my wife comes from the other side of Seneca Lake, the Dundee. Dresden area.
Mm-hmm. There's a racetrack over there that we can hear across the lake sometimes.
Yes, the speedway at Dundee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, pretty much directly across. Yeah, my family's the fifth generation just on that little piece of land, which just going to have his first
you
birthday.
You have Seneca Lake water in your blood.
Cool. Well, and I'd love to, I mean, you said, are there copies for sale of
yes.
his last articles
yeah.
for the quarterly?
I say yes, there should be out
right.
there.
Okay. And then, did Black Dome Press, who printed the Old Times Corner?
No.
This is the
1920s, 1930s. Black Dome isn't even.
Okay. I didn't know if it was republished recently. I mean,
it was printed by what was the Catskill Daily Mail of the time.
Okay.
The Examiner Recorder or whatever was in existence at the time.
We're going to go out and see Debbie on Friday, going out to the Finger Lakes, so she's going to give us some beat-up copies of something. So, I mean, they've got so many amazing books, you know.
Yeah. Been
checking them out of the Catskill Library, which is nice, but try to have a library in the museum, the Cat yeah. Museum. But, well, thanks. I mean,
well, I have okay. someone to ask. We're talking about doing some projects with kids mm-hmm. around history, maybe doing some oral histories, getting the kids to write down some of these stories. And I was wondering if you know of anyone who works with young people doing historical research or just doing programs, and also if you know people who maybe aren't necessarily historians, but old folks in the area that would want to talk to some kids and be good people to kind of start with and doing some of that storytelling type stuff.
Well, you got the schools, particularly fourth grade, is New York State history, as well as a certain amount of eighth grade, and then there's another variation that comes on in high school. And we, the Greene County Historical Society, has had a whole series of programs that are involved with fourth graders and getting kids involved in local history and so on.
That's good to know. So maybe the fourth and eighth grade teachers are the ones, because that's what, according to New York State right. curriculum, they have to do it at those
now,
ages.
Right? Having said that, fourth grade and eighth grade teachers are dealing with the fact that they have to pass the standardized tests and they have to do all these things. And
right, then there's
can't find time to put this into the schedule and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be better off to work with perhaps the local scout groups or the community center
mm-hmm.
operation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other difficulties you might have is trying to find the local people who know the history of the county as opposed to the people who have moved here and may or may not know the history of the county.
That's what I'm asking, if there's folks out there, you know, in their 80s or 90s that would be, that you know, that would be really good ones for kids to talk to, really easy, like having children around. If you know people like that, we could kind
yeah,
of start with.
You're describing most of the Historical Society members.
Okay, so the Historical Society is a place to
right.
start. Okay.
Seems like I'm meeting a lot of people. Like, when I bring my dad out here, he's just going to start talking and you're not going to get a stop. And I'm like, great, bring him out here. That's I like people that just want to talk and, you know, even, you know, right or wrong. It's just like to see their eyes light up and get to tell their stories where, you know.
No, I just more question. Do you know of anyone working on collecting oral histories?
Oh, we've done that. Sporadically. It's not the easiest thing to do because people will, in a conversational mode, will be great. They'll okay. tell you that, you know, my father, and here's what happened, here's what we did. But when you go to tape an interview, they somehow, you know, that narrows their focus and they don't perform quite as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly worth trying because a lot of the ways that that you keep local history is through oral history.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are still people around.
I think with this radio station, I don't know, WGXC is like, you know, they got a full FCC license, 3,300 watts, and like that's, you know, that's who we're borrowing this recorder
right.
from, you know, so that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, to like what are these shows during the day, they have to all be community oriented, so easily
right.
you know, start collecting these people, you know, and
yeah.
even like make the new old time corner, you know, audio show.
We've had discussions with them off and on
yeah.
But they've never gotten back to us.
Well, they're not on air yet. They're like, they're end of September. There's a whole, they call it a barn raising, where these these radio people are coming. So they're really, you know, coming up with another $30,000 to like get, you know, because it's a big to do to get the, rent the tower, build the house. Blah, blah. So yeah, once it really starts rolling, I'm sure, you know, they'll come back. They're just like focused. Can we get on the air?
I think they're also taking proposals for programming for radio shows.
But yeah, somebody, yeah, Max was even talking about like, you know, the kind of neighbor across the way,
because we talked with them about doing either, you know, a series of for lack of a better term, focused shows,
right,
where you talk the entire thing about the Mountain House,
yeah,
or you do some similar things like that, mm-hmm, all about Wyndham, or
right, yeah, yeah, and whatever. Then people can call in and at the end, or get a little. Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, that's exactly what the station's there for, yeah, and like, you know, like it's almost like we should reiterate or like even fill out this form, you know, even though they're selecting shows now, but, you know, just to keep the historical society, it's good that you guys are into that, because I think that would be great, you know.
I think they're still interested, all their energy is just going into this big event.
Yeah, they have to, yeah, to get, you know, it's $150,000 to get a station on
just the air. Just to keep yourself, your head above water.
Right, right. Just to, you know, turn on the transmitter is $150,000, which they got the $75,000 grant, and then they're raising the other $75,000. But it's good. It's going to be a good thing, and it's good that you guys, I think that would be a great show.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We should go look around and, you know, see what kind of images I got. And, you know, really wanting to see Jesse's image, because my historic Catskill book is buried.